This is Aspire, Arch Street Public Radio, broadcasting interviews from our Innovate podcast series.
Born in the Netherlands, Derek Noord studied evolutionary biology and environmental management at the University of Amsterdam. Being an entrepreneur at heart, however, during his studies, he founded RoomForRoom.com, the first European community for international home exchanges. In 2003, Derek founded the consultancy firm Fair Ventures, which later spun off into the BID Network Foundation, realizing that besides access to finance, the global talent gap is a major barrier to progress for many social enterprises. In 2011, he started Moving Worlds, a company that empowers social impact organizations around the world by linking them with professionals looking to travel and volunteer their expertise abroad. Derek lives and works in South America since 2008 and is currently based in Colombia.
Derek Noord, welcome to Innovate Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
How does an evolutionary biology major enter the world of social entrepreneurship?
Ha, that's a great question. So, yeah, I guess I've always been fascinated with how systems work. So that's one of the reasons I studied evolutionary biology. Just wanted to understand better how living organisms interconnect, how selection works, how you can really sort of start something and then, you know, make it sort of spread out over or scale it over a larger population. I mean, evolutionary biology is really, really about that, if you look especially at population dynamics. So it's a bit of a far-fetched maybe, but in a way I think there is kind of a parallel with being an entrepreneur and pioneering something new. Like you start with an idea, you enter a new field, and you see sort of how your idea can sort of scale and become real in the real world. In a strange way, there's sort of a parallel, but I think also there's just the fact that I, when I graduated, I was a little bit disenchanted with the whole sort of academia environment where, you know, the best option that was there at the moment really was to be a PhD student, continue research. And this was at a time that a lot of exciting stuff was happening out there in the real world. And I just felt more compelled to jump in there and do real things.
While you were a student, were you already developing Room for Room at that time, or was that after you had already graduated?
Yeah, that Room for Room, that's a while back. It's I started Room for Room was my first endeavor, my first company, which, yes, I actually started it while I was still studying in Amsterdam. We're talking, this was about 1998, 1999, at which time in the Netherlands, at least, internet was very upcoming still. I think you guys in the U.S. are a little ahead of us, probably a little bit more used to like doing online transactions and everything. And this was a time in the Netherlands that the first, you know, internet bubble was sort of developing. At the time, I was studying, and I also worked at a student collective that had all kinds of interesting projects. We ran our own cinema, we had our own, you know, a theater, a cafe, and then we were starting with a couple of friends an internet agency also, where we helped others in academia and also other companies to build their websites. So at that time, I was really fascinated by the possibilities of connecting people through the web and the world that was sort of opening up. I guess I've always been fascinated by sort of the larger world out there, you know, wanting to conquer, wanting to get to know, you know, everything that's out there, new countries, new places. So one of the, I guess, kind of obvious ideas that developed at some point was like, okay, we have all these people traveling to Amsterdam, and we have the world out there for people to travel to. There is no obvious way for people basically to connect if they want to stay in a place where somebody else is leaving their apartment or their house, and basically do sort of an exchange or a hospitality stay also in a different city. So we started to elaborate on this idea, found an investor at the time in 1999, I think, one of the first Dutch sort of venture capitalists that was investing in internet, and started work out the idea. So it was basically, I guess it was kind of a mixture between, you know, homeexchange.com and what is now Airbnb,
yeah.
Where you could basically just, you know, be a host to a guest in a different city, or actually exchange your house when you're traveling. Focus on a young crowd, mostly at like a young professional crowd. And so yeah, that launched in about a year, and it existed for about 3 years, and then went bankrupt, as most internet businesses did at the time, because nobody was using their credit card online, basically.
So you're a little ahead of the e-commerce curve there on that end.
I guess yes, exactly. You know, plus loads of mistakes, obviously, that we made as well. So. Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's fascinating you talk about that spirit of travel and creating points of connection and connectivity, kind of being wired into Room for Room.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously is a major backbone or a major component of moving worlds as well. I was wondering if you could elaborate for me, how are your experiences during your time with Room for Room and even a BID network kind of prepare you for moving worlds?
So that's a great question. I think it informed me a lot on what mistakes to avoid. So in a way, yeah, I'll quickly elaborate on. So Room for Room was basically a tech business 1.0. Then, you know, after some other studies and some other endeavors I did, I started this foundation in the Netherlands, also called the BID Network, which was partly funded by the Dutch government also. The premise behind that was really helping entrepreneurs in emerging markets or developing countries to be more successful and to be able to access finance. You know, there's this big finance gap, especially in emerging markets, between sort of the microfinance stage and sort of the later, you know, typical sort of venture capital stage, or where you can really go to a bank and you have, you know, you're looking for $500,000 and you have the collateral to back it up already.
Right.
So it's sometimes called the missing middle. It's a huge issue. Like, there's a lot of countries in the world where people have just basically no access to finance for, yeah, let's say $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 to build or scale their business. So that realization, along with sort of a trend, I think that was starting at the time, that, you know, the whole trend of like trade, not aid, right? Like, we should not, like, development aid should not be about like giving money and, you know, building wells and villages. It should be about empowering people to build their own. So
certainly, yeah.
Right. And so that realization, I think, was also kicking in around that time, around the millennium change, was sort of the government we had. And we started a simple initiative that was basically kind of an online request for proposals, if you will, or a business plan competition, a tender we put out there in the world. We said, hey, you know, we like to see your business plan. If you're doing something innovative, if you're based in one of these emerging markets, and you impact the lives of people for the better, so you make some kind of social or environmental impact. And we want you to tell us, just like, we don't want you to send us like long business plans. We want you to tell us just, you know, in one or two sheets, like, what is your plan and how is it working, and what do you need finance for? And so, long story short, we received like something like 800 proposals from like 75 wow. different countries in the world. It was kind of overwhelming.
That's intense. Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of intense. So yeah, this also, of course, because, you know, the internet now allows that to happen. This was about in 2005, I think. And so we had to like build this whole thing while we were, you know, while we were operating it. Like, we roped in a lot of screeners. We got sponsors from companies to mentor these people. And then we basically developed sort of a foundation around it. We started working with partners in some of these countries. Of course, we focused also, you know, in the end, we could not be in 75 countries to support entrepreneurs, so we made some choices there. So yeah, that was really the start of this foundation that existed to support emerging market entrepreneurs and to help them get access to finance. And there was this big internet component there as well, sort of this thinking like, hey, if we use the power of the internet to reach people that are sort of locked out of this sort of bubble of connections or this access, you know, there's a lot that can happen, like through online mentoring, etc. So I think, yeah, back to your question, I guess the first experience of like building a sort of a matching platform for people to, you know, to find a place to stay when they're traveling, like by means of home exchange, that was a connection platform, right? And then starting to work with entrepreneurs all around the world, that was sort of the second way of making connections, but much more focused on empowering entrepreneurs. So I guess with Moving Worlds that I started about 5 years ago, in a way it's kind of a merger between the two, because Moving Worlds is now, it's kind of a match.com for social entrepreneurs looking for talent, looking for people who want to volunteer their skills, basically, and want to make a real impact. So it's about all those people who might, you know, feel a little bit stuck in the corporate rat race, professionals that looking for a career change, or simply people that want to take a sabbatical and say, like, look, I've worked, you know, 25 years as an accountant. I'm either taking a sabbatical, I want to do something meaningful in that time, and really use my skills to make an impact in a different country or a different context. Or, you know, maybe I'm retiring and I'm looking to give back. So we connect them to projects and organizations in emerging markets where they can really make a difference.
It's interesting, again, just hearing that evolution from Room to Room to, like I said, BID to Moving Worlds, and that idea that it's really been driven by people and pairing people and real connectivity, and again, like I said, using the internet and technology to its best purposes. Tell us a little bit about how the organization was formed.
Yeah, that was sort of a serendipitous story as well. So I was living in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, around 2010-11, and I was with the BID Network. I was working on building partnerships for South America. At that time, I ran into, like, at one networking event, I ran into this guy called Marco Rozovsky from Seattle. We started speaking about, you know, this was just after the financial crisis. So there were a lot of foreigners, you know, in Buenos Aires, just like young professionals looking for their next thing. Not necessarily strapped of cash, because a lot of them have good jobs, but sort of strapped of meaning and maybe a little bit in this quest for the next thing. Mark had his own company, actually. He sold out of it and started traveling, and actually he started sort of support organizations around the globe with his marketing skills. And he was in Buenos Aires at the time supporting a social enterprise called TerraCycle with their marketing. So I started, you know, we started talking, like, I asked him, like, so how did you find all these amazing organizations to support? And he's like, yeah, you know, it's been a lot of work. I wrote a lot of emails. You know, it's like been a full-time job for a month to set my, you know, whole itinerary and, you know, find the right connections. But I really wanted to do it because, you know, I wanted to make this trip of a year really about, like, you know, connecting with the right organizations and really feeling that I'm making an impact. You know, and I, at the time, I was working with all these entrepreneurs in South America. I was seeing these amazing ideas, these, you know, early stage, in general, teams where the big thing that was lacking sometimes to make really the next step to, you know, becoming a serious venture is the right connection or the access to the right skills, the right networks. So we started, you know, we talked, and then the next day we were like, hey, we're not done talking. So we had lunch and we started to think about this idea that, like, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, like Mark, and there's a lot of social enterprises like I was working with, that could benefit from sort of a matching system or a connector that would help them find the right people at the right time to sort of accelerate their progress. So I guess that was the premise of the birth moment of Moving Worlds. And yeah, I remember we had lunch that day, and I think like at some point the night before, I was already thinking about it. I was like, oh, I have a good name. I think we should call it Moving Worlds. And I already claimed the URL, I think, like the, you know, sort of jumping to, you know, like you have in the spur of enthusiasm. And so the next day I said, like, yeah, I have a name for it. We should call it Moving Worlds. And Mark said, oh, that's a great name. We should claim register the URL. I said, I've already done it. So that was the moment that, like, okay, you know, this is serious.
We're all set, yeah.
Yeah, so that was the start. You know, from there on, really, it has been, we've never been really, you know, too, let's say, in the first year, we've never been like, okay, we need investors now, we need to scale this like tomorrow, we need to sort of flip over the company 10 times. It's really more about like, hey, let's see if there's a market for this sort of hypothesis-driven approach a little bit from the start. Like, let's test it out. Hey, you know, I'm already getting maybe, you know, 10 emails a month from people and friends of friends that are saying, hey, Derek, you're living in South America. That's so cool. Don't you know somebody for me that can help me with this and this? I'm traveling there. Can you connect me? And we're like, cool. Let's start something. Let's find something around that and let's start charging a little bit for it, right? If you will. So that was sort of our first test. And then when we found out like what was working. We basically, I think it took us 2 years to really launch our first website and really, you know, officially sort of launch the company.
So that timetable, again, really progressing, taking measures to ensure that the company would be viable and that there was a space for it. Is that a product of your prior experiences with Room for Room in the field? It seems like you were really, both you and Mark are really keyed on protecting the space as well. Talk a little bit about that process for our listeners, as I think that's a really important aspect of entrepreneurship and developing a company that we don't really discuss as much as we should.
It's interesting. I think that there's two things at play here. Like, first of all, you know, we were just careful about our own lives and you know, careers. Still, we were getting to know each other, and you know, to start a company together, that's a big leap. So I think the first year was just like we were still like going back and forth. But I honestly was still like with the BitNetwork. I was working there. So but as the idea was taking shape, we really found there was something there. And now I think the second point, more interesting, is I think it's true. Like the sort of this mindset of like super fast growth and you know, a lot of investment and then turning over your company, and this is sort of what investors look for typically, is not always necessarily the best way to grow a company. So I think what we've done from the beginning is very much build on organic growth from the beginning, actually. We've actually had an investment round, a small seed round, and that's the only investment we've taken so far. And besides that, we've always basically tried to find really sort of what is the fit here that we're looking for that can both ensure us that impact and also, you know, a viable value proposition for the volunteers or their experteers, as we like to call them, mm-hmm. to provide them with a meaningful experience, and you know, to also of course charge for them for that in a fair way, that you know, that is a viable business for us. It's a sustainable model, and I think for us it's really worked well, because I think this sort of slower growth and finding out what people want, you know, work with 10, 20 people the first year maybe and see what's really happening in the field. What are their stories? What can we learn from them, being open from their feedback? That's been really important for us in those first years to inform sort of which next steps we should be taking. And I think that would have not been possible had we taken, you know, let's say if some investor would have been crazy enough to, let's say, invest $1 million from start, we would have had much more pressure to, you know, to quickly grow. And I don't know, maybe that that would have resulted in a different kind of company today. Who knows? Maybe for worse or for the better. But I think for us at least, like the organic growth path has been quite beneficial in the end to the product that we're having today. And as we speak, we're actually defining some new packages and a new model around our value proposition that we're hoping to launch later this year.
Today's episode is brought to you by Arch Street Press and Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community. Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community is a transformative collection of essays that provide a thoughtful and engaging way to revolutionize how and what we eat. Written by a diverse group of chefs, nutritionists, and food activists, Mindful Eating offers pragmatic strategies to rebuild the connections between diet, culture, faith, the environment, and community well-being, with a focus on the deep connection between mindful eating, social justice, and sustainability. Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community, available now from Arch Street Press.
I want to talk a little bit about Expertise here. I know that you kind of gave a general description of the range of Expertise that you've worked with, but give us an idea, if you could elaborate a little bit more on what that looks like.
Yeah, so it's a broad range, like you say, of people in different walks of life. We accept professional skills that can be a lot of things, right? But I think like we bucketed them a little bit into sort of the fields that social entrepreneurs need most in general in their growth phase or in their early stage growth. It's typically around finance, around marketing, around product design, around process improvement, and also investor relations and that kind of thing. So sort of typical business skills, I would say. The typical... sort of there's not really the typical expert here, but I would say most people, and most of them coming from the US and Europe today, although the percentage of like emerging market expertise is growing fast in our membership, which is great. You know, a lot of people from India, Brazil as well. But I would say they're sort of young to mid level professionals, you know, early 30s. Having worked for a while in the corporate world and really, you know, arriving at a point that they want to do something that is closer to their heart, maybe in a smaller scale, work directly with smaller teams, having more of a feeling of making a direct impact and seeing a positive social impact also. So some of these people are actually looking for a career change. Some of them might just be looking for a break. So that's sort of one big bucket, I would say. Most people that come to us are sort of in that phase of their life. And then there's another significant group as well of more people at the end of their careers that are really about, I think, more about giving back. You know, they're maybe not so interested in the whole, you know, I want to develop my curriculum as well, or want to, you know, have this next cool international experience. They've done that already, you know, they've been around, maybe they've grown companies, they've had positions, sometimes international as well, and they're really just like looking for this next phase of giving back and sharing their knowledge, you know, having fun in the world also, not being bound anymore by, you know, all these corporate rules. So that's a large group as well. I would say those two groups, so the young professional and the more like, you know, closer to maybe retirement. Of some people don't like to be identified with that word. But
more
like
established in the later period of their professional development.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. That's it. I would say those are the two big groups. And then there's a smaller group of people who are maybe already traveling and that are looking more to sort of connect their skills, you know, on the road a little bit more for shorter time stints normally. I would say that's the smaller group. It's interesting because we started out like sort of more focusing on that audience. you know, and maybe also looking at our competitive landscape, that would be more so like, hey, there's other matching platforms for people who travel and then want to volunteer their skills as they go. Normally these platforms are sort of membership based, or you can just sign up and find a volunteer assignment for a couple of weeks. And we noticed really that that's not, I think, where we're evolving to. Also, the whole volunteerism space is not necessarily a sustainable one. So actually, from the scratch, we've been clear about, like, you know, the projects you can find and can help you find via Moving Worlds are always, you know, demand-driven projects. So it means that there's actually, we identify a real need at an organization, and then, you know, we match them to the right professional. Those projects also will never charge you to go somewhere as you are going there to, you know, give your time and skills.
Right.
So rather, you know, you will receive benefits for, you will probably receive free accommodations and sometimes, you know, other benefits like a stipend. And so, yeah, we really noticed that the sweet spot there for us is really a little bit more experienced professional that can bring something to the table.
On that end, in terms of stipends or accommodations, and those are being then provided by the organizations that are looking for your professional help, correct?
Yeah, in general, yes. We ask those organizations, or we help to scope the project. So we have some guidelines. So what, you know, what we think a good project should entail, and then we always ask them, like, what benefits can you provide? What can you invest? You know, there's a range of organizations in terms of their, you know, their financial capacities or what they can, but we always, the bottom line is actually that we ask them to provide accommodations on site for the expert tier. Some other tangible benefits, sometimes, you know, you get food stipend or travel stipend. But there's this more important part of, like, what more intangible benefits can you provide? What kind of experience can you provide? How much time can you spend with the expert tier? For cultural immersion, for, feedback on the project also. So that's a very important part for us. We have some projects as well that are actually sort of sponsored by third parties, by partners. We have a few partnerships with corporate foundations, like with the Siemens Foundation, for example, and with impact investors also. And those projects are actually have more benefits for the expert here. So, you know, they generally cover your international travels, or they pay for your ticket. There's normally a larger stipend involved. So the idea there is that there's really, it's great if there's a third party that can actually benefit from us making sort of this, you know, cost-effective connection where there's a pro bono consultant, if you will, that can really help accelerate the progress of that grassroots organization. And if there's, you know, an impact investor that benefits from that, then sometimes they can assume the cost of that engagement.
Typically, how long do these placements run?
That also depends. It's quite fluid. I think in general, on average, I should say somewhere between 1 and 3 months. But we classified a couple of different roles that experteers typically take on. So we have sort of the consultant role, consultant or trainer role, where somebody comes in for a specific, transfer of knowledge, I would say, or analysis of the situation and then specific recommendation that's really focused on transfer of knowledge. Those are on the shorter term in general. So they could even be for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Much shorter, normally not, because there's really this onboarding time as well, always, if you want to really make a difference. And then we have more like, you know, roles that are really about execution of a project that has a clear sort of set of deliverables. Like, hey, you come in and you help really this organization to set up a roadmap, like, you know, how to, start exporting internationally, for example. That involves, you know, getting to know the field, doing research, then working with the organization to set up that, you know, that plan together, and maybe some implementation of it as well. Those are typically more, 3-4 month long projects or even longer. And then we have a few like roles that are really more about like longer term execution, like really become part of the team, immerse yourself up to a year more or less.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So basically, if I wanted to volunteer my time in social media, helping develop, I can do a summer term somewhere in India then.
Absolutely, yeah. I invite you to come check it out.
So on that end, where are your expertise going? What's mm-hmm. What does the host end organizations look like in profile?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we are all over the world. I would say if I look at the most popular destinations, so organizations come to us right now organically, come to us from all over the world. We have a set of guidelines that we say, like, this is the type of organization we like to help. Like I said, there should be a component of social impact. There should be a component of entrepreneurship. So what we typically attract these days, like our most popular destinations are kind of these sort of social entrepreneurship hubs or hotspots that are popping up in the world. To give you an example, like I think one of our most popular destinations is Nairobi now in Kenya. India is big, like Mumbai, Delhi, Mexico City is a big one. So these are all cities in emerging market that are in a moment of huge transition now. Cities that are growing fast, that are big, where a lot of stuff is happening, and where generally also a lot of people from outside are coming in now, and so there's this sort of fluid interaction of information going on, where people starting, new businesses tailored to the local population there. Maybe it's let's say I was just talking here in Medellin, which is also kind of an entrepreneurship hub these days. To a group of people locally, they were setting up how do you call those laundromats? Like what doesn't exist here, like the concept didn't exist here in Colombia, where you can just pay 50 cents and take your dirty clothes to wash in a laundromat, sort of a subscription model, instead of having to buy a washing machine for your house.
Right.
So those are typically like new concepts that can be piloted. That are tailored to a specific demographic here, right?
Right.
And so there's a lot of stuff happening there. We try to work with the most sort of interesting, of course, most innovative social enterprises that are doing, that are sort of piloting new business models, that are trying to make an impact. And there's a big concentration of those in those hotspots these days. But that said, we also have, we also have projects in rural settings in Namibia, in Africa, where we do community training. So there's also some NGOs on there. But I would say the sweet spot and the growth is really in the social enterprises. In those big cities in the emerging market world.
So along those lines too, could you share with us maybe one or two success stories from these pairings?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Absolutely. I think maybe speaking to what I was just saying, one interesting case where an exporteer ended up becoming the director of marketing and opened up a U.S. office for one of the organizations we supported is. We work with a small, well, it was not that small, but it was a startup in Brazil called eBanks. A couple of years ago, I think 3-4 years ago, they were working on micropayments. So making it possible for people to make micropayments in their store in villages in Brazil for all kinds of types of transactions. They developed some technology around that and a protocol. And they were looking to expand that into other Latin American countries. We paired them to a woman from California, Nicole, and she had experience in the financial world, and she was really fascinated about the whole new fintech space and what was possible there. Great professional, very very driven, very very result driven, and person that can really improve processes. So we matched them up with directly with the CEO of eBanks. She traveled to Brazil stay with them for 3 months to work on a sort of an expansion plan. They decided in the process that actually the U.S. was also an interesting market for them. I think sort of the, you know, cities like L.A. that have a lot of migrant populations as well, for remittances, right? So, so long story short, it was a very successful interaction. They did the project for 3 months. She wrapped up, went back home, and then really got a call, I think a couple of weeks later, like, hey, we really miss you here. You know, do you want to, you know, can we hire you as our director of expansion, basically? And now she runs the, she's now the one of the directors of eBanks, and she runs their U.S. office out of L.A., I believe. So that's, that was a good story.
That's a pretty good pairing. That's fantastic. That's, wow. What's next for Moving Worlds?
Yeah, the future is full of interesting challenges, and we're starting to. So, like I said before, like this audience that we're speaking to of young professionals looking for change. I mean, that's a huge. Of course, that's a huge thing, right? That's sort of globally, it's almost like a trend. You see, people are working more independently. You know, the whole millennial generation idea, of course, but then also looking for more meaningful careers. So we see there's a hunger out there, not only maybe to be matched, you know, to a project in, you know, location ABC, but there's also, I would say, like sort of an add-on need for learning and for community. People really looking also to learn from others, you know, how have they made that transition and support each other and having some kind of a peer learning system. So one of the things we launched last year as an experiment a little bit was sort of a more exclusive, if you will, or, you know, I would say more premier program, which is more an educational program also, called the Moving Worlds Institute, where we actually have a six-month program where people can apply to. And then if they're accepted, it starts with actually a real life kickoff. So it's a 3-day meetup. We did two in Seattle, one in San Francisco. The next one will be in Amsterdam, actually, launching in May. And inscriptions are open now, actually, for people that are interested to come check that out. So that will be our first Europe-based Moving Worlds Institute. It's going to be an amazing group of people there that support us. But so, yeah, that. The idea there is that you can really connect with people who are looking for a transition in their career. There's a kickoff where we're going to work a little bit to set goals. There's a purpose assessment. There's you're going to be paired with a mentor, somebody from the industry that has been working in, you know, international development or social enterprise for a while. And then there's this whole learning component, and then there's basically a much more immersive assessment of, you know, what do you want to accomplish in your next step, what type of organization, what type of projects would be challenging for you to help you get there. And then we, of course, also match you to the right project. And so there's the component of you go experteering somewhere in the world. And then there's, you know, more the debriefing piece where you come back, you reflect on your learnings. There's and during that whole period, there's sort of that community piece as well, and that education piece. So that's something we're really excited about. We've done two cohorts already. They've been very successful, and so we're moving into that space a little bit more. And at the same time, we're also looking like that. That's kind of a premiere. It's almost like outside of what we normally do, you know, on our platform and sort of what we've, you know, what we've become to be good at, just the matchmaking piece. So this is really for people who are, you know, really want to make a full-time investment for this. We're looking now to sort of see how we can also incorporate some of that learning and community into our normal offering on our website. So there will be probably soon we will launch a few different membership levels, or yeah, whatever you want to call it. It might be called programs as well, where people can join on the lower price tag, and sort of use the force of virtual communities also to connect to each other and to organizations.
Excellent. And how do potential experteers connect with you online?
They can go to movingworlds.org, and there's an about section, so you will find our email address there. There's also there's different ways on the website to interact with us through chat widgets, etc. And then we have the Moving Worlds Institute that has a separate website now, where you find more about what that program entails in more detail, and also the dates and application rounds. You can find that at mwi.movingworlds.org. And so there's many ways to connect with us. It's pretty low barrier. We'll get back to you always within 24 hours.
Fantastic. And listeners who are interested in finding out more about Derek and Moving Worlds can also check out the links on the episode page here on innovatepodcast.org. Derek, thank you very much for your time and your work with Moving Worlds, and we look forward to speaking to you in the future.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much, Jim. I hope we can connect again.
Thank you for joining us today. Our library of interviews and a range of further resources are available at our website, innovatepodcast.org. Aspire and Innovate are produced in partnership with Ashoka, Innovators for the Public, the Kellogg Fellows Leadership Alliance, the Philadelphia Social Innovations Journal, and by Arch Street Press. For PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.